It's time for The Medley. I'm Blake Crash Priddle, and this week we have Canadian scientist and television personality Alan Nursall. Alan Nursall has worked at various science institutions across Canada over the years, including Science North, and more recently the TELUS World of Science in Edmonton, and was also a contributor on the TV show Daily Planet on the Discovery Channel. Today he's going to tell us all about his career in science, what inspired him to pursue his path, and some interesting stories that happened to him while filming Daily Planet and during his time at my favorite science museum, Science North. Let's start by talking about your passion for science. Where did that come from?
Oh, it came from a very legitimate source. Both my parents were scientists. They both had graduate degrees in science, both worked at the University of Alberta. My father was a marine biologist for almost 40 years, and I was exposed to science from a young age and always enjoyed it. So it came very naturally.
What school did you go to?
Well, over the years I went to a variety of schools, but it's interesting you asked that question because my first real exposure to science as a sort of fun, joyful experience was a science club when I was in grade 6 at Grandview Heights Elementary School in Edmonton. And it was run by my mother, of all things. And there were a bunch of us. We went off to the university on regular events and to laboratories. And so that was a really sort of interesting exposure. And it shows, it really underscores the importance of getting kids when they're sort of ready to be curious. But I did postsecondary studying at Brock University in Ontario, and then I did a Master's of Science at University of Alberta in Edmonton, and then I was in a PhD program at University of Toronto, in Toronto, of course, and I'm a PhD dropout. I decided that the pure research wasn't really where I wanted to be, and the lure of science centers and science communication kind of captured me. And I found myself falling into a world I didn't even know existed.
When you were in the science club, that must have really prepared you for your time at Science North when you were the director of that place.
Well, I was the science director. I reported to a CEO, but no, it was just a wonderful experience. I mean, I was recruited. They were looking for my scientific training is in climatology and meteorology, atmospheric science. And they were looking for a weather guy or gal to go up to Sudbury, help build a science center that was under construction. And they found me, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. It really seemed to mesh with where I thought my skills and my passions lay. And so I took a big, big chance. Nobody moved to Sudbury in 1983, but I did. And spent 30 great years in Sudbury. And we built a magnificent science center. In fact, we built two of them because we built one main science center and built another one at the Big Nickel that we called Dynamic Earth, and did work all around the world. And it was amazing. It was so much fun just to be able to play in the world of science and technology and engineering and math. And spread the joy that I felt with kids and adults alike.
I used to go to Science North all the time with my dad growing up in Espinola, Ontario, which is just outside of Sudbury. And I absolutely loved all the exhibits, especially the one with the beaver and the porcupine. And I believe the porcupine at the time, his name was Ralph. But I used to love going there. And I think I actually ran into you a couple of times and we struck up a conversation. It's a small world.
Yeah. Well, and you probably did because I lived in my weather lab, the atmosphere lab. and the joy was meeting people and engaging them and showing them fun things. And hopefully at some point you got to freeze bubbles and learn a little bit about how rain and snow are formed. And it's funny to talk about running into me or speaking with me on the floor. One of my great stories that I think exemplifies what made Science North such a special experience. Back in the 80s, I remember I had bought an Apple IIe computer, real state of the art. This would have been about 1985. And I, of course, in that those open laboratories, those open exhibit spaces, that's where it was delivered to. And I started unboxing it and putting it together. And a couple of kids, probably about 10 years old, came by and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm opening up this, putting this computer together." And they said, "Can we help?" "Sure, of course you can help." So, you know, they took things out of boxes and we got the CPU set up and had to put the plugs, the cards in for the disk drives and for the printer. And through some miracle, after about half an hour of futzing around, the whole thing worked. And those kids wandered off and did other things. And then about a year later, this kid came by, we came through the science center and looked at me and goes, "Hey, do you remember me?" I said, "Yeah, you and 300,000 other people." And he said, "You were the guy who showed us what the inside of a computer looked like." And I mean, that was a takeaway experience for him. And it's not even planned. It was me doing real stuff. I had gotten this new computer and we were figuring out how to put it all together. And I loved that sort of organic, free, structured learning that that made Science North such a special place. And of course, you never knew what the porcupine and the beaver would be up to either. It was fun having those animals around to engage our visitors.
The one thing that I remember very well is the experiments that the Bluecoats did in that little theater. I forget the name of it, but they made things like elephant toothpaste and did the gummy bear torture. It was nice that they gave everybody a heads up saying, "This is going to be loud, so cover your ears."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that was the Discovery Theater. It's mandatory that every science center have spaces labeled Discovery. And so we had the Discovery Theater. Yeah, I loved performing in there. I loved doing stuff. My favorite was the exploding soap bubbles. You fill soap bubbles full of natural gas, and because natural gas is lighter than air, they float above your head, and you with the candle and a long stick, you ignite them when they're, you know, 2 or 3 meters over your head, and it heats up the space real nice.
I saw that one. As a matter of fact, it was in grade 7. I was sitting in like the front row, and for some reason, I just had my hands out, and my teacher took a picture of the soap bubbles that were on fire. So when the picture came out, it looked like I was holding the flame in my hands, and that was on display in the classroom.
Magnificent. That's great. And that's the sort of fun that should be part of the experience. And, Science North was a fascinating place to sort of start that career and work with folks. Cause it was funny when we opened the Science Center, we had no idea what we were doing, but we sort of had to try to be different. In any way we could. And amazing things came out of that.
One amazing thing was the cartoon character named Sheepy, which he was voiced by Rick Mercer, who I believe visited Science North.
Yes, yes. He's been to Science North a few times. And he did, I'm not sure if it was before Sheepy or after Sheepy. It must have been before, when the Rick Mercer report came to Science North, and I was his guide as we wandered around through the Science Center and made things blow up and made things happen that looked good on television. Sheepy was a great character and an inspirational choice for the show we did on climate change, because I was responsible for that show. And for sort of harnessing up all the creative energy of the people who were working on it. And one of the mandates they were given was no sort of voice of God for the narrator, no David Attenborough, no Al Gore. It's like, what's the voice of this theater going to be? And it took a long time, but the writer is the guy who came up with the idea of making it a sheep, because sheep live outdoors. They live, you know, they live in the weather, they're close to it. And they look kind of cute and funny, and they're easy to animate. So the sheep worked really well. And Mercer did an amazing job with the voice.
And speaking of animals, if you haven't gone to Science North yet, you can't go without having a flying squirrel jump into your pocket. What they'll do is they'll give you a blue coat,
to wear, and they'll have the squirrel jump off and into your pocket. It's really cool. It kind of feels funny, but it's a cool experience.
Yeah, it is. It's a very memorable experience with being at the receiving end of the flying squirrel jumping out of a tree and landing on you on that blue lab coat. We learned the hard way that not to select volunteers for that task wearing skirts. We had an international episode where the wife of the Swedish diplomat had the squirrel land on her and run up into a difficult place to extract it from. Mind you, but speaking of Rick Mercer, when Rick Mercer caught the flying squirrel, because as soon as they land on you, they look for a dark, comfy little cozy place. And Rick Mercer caught, we flew the squirrel onto Mercer, and he's wearing the blue lab coat, and it ducked into the lab coat and into his pants pocket. No word of a lie. He was wearing like black jeans, and it went shot into his pants pockets. And the young female biologist says, I'm not going in there to get that squirrel. But Mercer eventually was able to extract the squirrel from his pants. But the best part was, after he did it, he thought of a line. This is what happens in television. Nothing on television is actually real. It's all sort of put together. He had gotten the squirrel out, but then he said, oh, wait, I got a line. And so he fakes it as if the squirrel is still in his pants and looks at the camera and goes, does he like nuts?
You also spent some time in front of the camera on the TV show Daily Planet. How did that come about, and what were some of the things that you did on that show?
I had the remarkable, extraordinary good fortune of being a part of that show for 22 years. And 5 minutes a week, but for 22 years. And it started, I had, when Discovery Canada was brand new, they had this show called at discovery.ca, because email and the web were cool and new. And it was an hour a night of Canadian science content. And they were looking for anybody who could do things to help fill the time on air. And I had done one or two little things, but one time I got this phone call from a producer who said, we've got this weekly audience participation contest that we do. It's called Discovery Challenge, and we ask people to improve upon everyday artifacts, everyday tools, everyday items. And this week's competition is to improve upon the windshield ice scraper. Come up with a better design for windshield ice scraper. And so what we'd like to do is we'd like to send you all the entries. This is back in the mid-90s when we still had mail and so on. We'll send you all the entries, and we'll hook up with the cameraman, and we will get you to judge them on camera. To which I said, okay. And I ended up doing that, although this was January in Sudbury. That's why they wanted me to do it. But we ended up getting a little spot for them. I have that original tape. It's just terrible. But they seemed to like it, and they asked me if I'd like to do it every week. And so I did do that. I started doing that, the Discovery Challenge, every week. And then it morphed into a variety of different styles of segment. But it was amazing. And I did the Science on the Street stuff for many, many years, where we engaged people, just the general public, in scientific demonstrations and activities, and shot those. We shot those from Nova Scotia to British Columbia, and even down in the U.S. We did Central Park, and then when we sort of morphed into something called the Alan Nursehall Experience, where I think I had been on the show too long, and they just decided it was time to kill me. So they started making me go jousting, and they pushed me out of airplanes. But it was extraordinary. I got to fly the Goodyear blimp. I've had jetpacks. I've been rescued out of caves. It's been remarkable. It really has been. It was just extraordinary. But every single person who was associated with that show knew how fortunate they had been be a part of it, because it was a great show. To, you know, won awards and it was a lot of fun to be a part of.
The first time I watched Daily Planet was with my grandmother, and she saw you on that particular episode, and she says, "Isn't that the guy that's at Science North?" And yeah, it was.
That's right. Yeah, it is the Science North guy. I was very fortunate. I mean, I had a full-time job at the Science Center, but I was able somehow to shoehorn the Daily Planet pieces in there as well. It was a lot of work doing that, but it was a lot of fun, and it was very rewarding. And again, especially near the end, when I was doing less, it was less dependent upon me to conjure up all the science demos and so on, and rather the producers were finding fun things for me to do that occasionally intersected with the world of science and engineering, and sometime were just, let's see if we can hurt Al. And they did sometimes. I broke a collarbone in one shoot. We were doing the physics of the triple axel, and we had an arena in Mississauga. We had Jeffrey Buttle from Sudbury, but men's world champion figure skater, like the best man in the world. We had a two-person high-speed slow-mo camera, plus a couple of other cameras, plus sound, plus a producer. And it was all about how figure skaters do those jumps and spins. And I was wearing figure skates, and I managed, about 10 o'clock in the morning, I managed to trip and fell hard on the ice and really hurt my shoulder. But you've got to shoot to get, you've got to get that stuff in the can. And especially if you've got a world champion figure skater and a high speed camera with a crew and so on. So we shot till about 5 o'clock, got the segment. Then I had to drive back to Sudbury, but I couldn't move my right arm. But I did drive back to Sudbury. Which I guess probably shouldn't talk about too much, but I was okay. I could steer with my left arm. 8 years later, I got an X-ray of my shoulders, and the radiologist says that this collarbone's been broken. Oh, I know when that happened. So I actually shot a whole, you know, about 80% of a segment with a broken collarbone, because that's what you do.
Show must go on, eh?
Exactly. There was no sort of stopping and going to the hospital. I hurt myself all the time when I was, you know, sort of just a kid. You're used to sprains and so on. I'd never broken anything before, so I wasn't really thinking that it was that bad. And it eventually healed. You know, eventually, you know, I went home and gave it a week, and it sort of healed. There's a fun little lump there. If you try to feel my collarbone on the right side, there's a lump that shouldn't be there. but yeah, there was. And the only time I went to the hospital was the day after we were doing a bit on jousting. And jousting is, if anybody suggests you go jousting, don't. But we were shooting it on a small ranch outside of Calgary with a bunch of people who are jousters. And I was in full armor. I ended up falling off the horse. And armor can really, armor protect you. And it made the fall much, you know, okay. Although while I was in the process of falling, I was a little bit anxious about how it was going to turn out. But armor also pinches. And so you get a lot of pinch marks called armor bites. Some of them could be pretty. My knee was pretty messed up from the hinge there. So I did go to the hospital for that one because it was so sore. But there's nothing they can do. They said, go home, let it heal.
Being on camera is a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of skill to be good. You were certainly very good on TV, but I do know that your sister, Catherine Mary Stewart, who we've had on this show previously, being the actress that she is, you know, she has a lot of experience behind the camera. Did she give you any performance advice?
Not really. For a couple of reasons. One, she's living in LA and New York, so we're not geographically close. And I was never working from scripts and so on. I was just, it was always extemporaneous and I think she was a little bit, you know, she wasn't going to try to get involved where it was about helping explicate scientific principles. I think what we've got, and you see it in my brother as well, I think the three of us enjoy performing. We're each very different, but we all enjoy it. And I think seeing Kathy's success gave me a little more confidence. So that was helpful from her perspective for sure.
While we're on the topic of performers and celebrities, I do know that Science North had a lot of famous visitors, and I hear tell that at one point members of the royal family visited Science North. Is that true?
We had them all. We had Elizabeth and Philip in October of 1984, and then we had Diana and Charles. Diana and Charles, when Bob Rae was the Premier of Ontario, he and the Charles and Diana were coming on a royal visit, and he did the official provincial greeting for them at Science North in Sudbury, which outraged the press and the high society of Toronto and Ottawa that he would do such a thing. But they came to Sudbury. They had an amazing time at the Science Center. I chatted a little bit with Diana. Diana and Charles were having a bit of a problem at that time. And for some reason, I can't remember exactly why the subject was juggling. We were talking about juggling, I think because I had been juggling to entertain people while we were waiting for them to show up. And I asked her if she knew how to juggle. And she looked sort of around and goes, not around this, or she's ever juggled. And she looked at me and said, not around this blot, I don't. He was not a happy camper. But the point of this little story about Charles and Diana is they had such a good time in Sudbury. The next day, they sent William and Harry up to the Science Center for a visit. William and Harry came unannounced with their nannies and a couple of plainclothes security. And we were asked not to tell the media, and we didn't. And that was great. I remember hanging out with William at one point. I mean, he was probably 10 at the time. And there was we had this one little exhibit he was fascinated with. And so I got to spend a little bit of time with him, and it was great. They had a fantastic time. If I ever see Prince William, we'll probably reminisce about the good times at Science North.
You've had so many amazing memories at Science North, but after a long time, you decided to move to Edmonton. Why did you decide to leave Science North?
Well, I had been there for 24 years, and it was a grind. It was hard, and it was time for sometimes a change is as good as a rest. My time there was just sort of done, and so I moved on. And I had some mentors in the field who encouraged me to explore new avenues. So I worked for myself for about 6 years, and then the opportunity in Edmonton came up to take over as CEO at the Science Center in Edmonton. And Edmonton's my hometown, and I thought, you know, that'd be a cool opportunity. It's exactly what I was looking for, and so I applied and went through the process, and they were desperate enough that they hired me. It was a wonderful opportunity, and it's been, you know, I'm recently retired, like retired at the end of June. It was 10 amazing years, and I just enjoyed it immensely. A fantastic team, a fantastic city. We did great things. We really reinvented the Science Center over the past 10 years, and it was fantastic.
Well, I could talk all day about my favorite memories of Science North. What I'd like to know next is how you're going to be spending your retirement. Do you have any plans for that?
Well, the question of retirement is a good one, and one I've been asked a lot about. And I don't have any grand plans. I'm just enjoying the summer, but I am already getting pretty heavily involved in a couple of volunteer boards, volunteer organizations, and that's starting to keep me busy. I'm in no great rush because I know things will sort of come up, and I've already been talking to colleagues in the Science Center field who are talking about projects they're working on that they might like me to get involved with. So, jumping project to project will be kind of fun. I miss the content development. When you're running the Science Center, when you're the executive in charge of the Science Center, your main concern tends to always default to the financial. You got to make sure people are getting paid. You got to make sure that the fiduciary side of the business is okay and solid. And you have less opportunity on you to really get sort of deeply involved in the content side of things. But I spent 30 years of my 40 years in this business on the content side of things. And so retirement, I think, will give me a chance to go back and play in the content pool, which I'm really looking forward to.
And that was Canadian scientist and television personality Alan Nursall. From all of us here at the Medley, we wish Mr. Alan Nursall a happy retirement. And until next time, remember, here at the Medley, we're all kinds of different.